Well, hello again, everyone. Today is February 14th, the Sabbath, 2009. And what I'd like to do today is really ties in as a continuation of my last sermon, which was God's economic stimulus plan. And if I'd have had more time during that sermon, I probably would have went right on into this next section or topic that I'm going into today. But it's probably good that I did wait because of some recent developments. So one of them being that yesterday afternoon and last night, the House of Representatives of the U.S. Congress and the United States Senate both passed overwhelmingly this new legislation of this economic stimulus plan that has been pushed through rapidly. And it was 600 or 700 pages, but by the time they received it Thursday night, around midnight, it had ballooned up to 1,100 pages. 1,100 pages that virtually no congressman or no senator had time to read. Yet, overwhelmingly, it was voted and passed, so it's going to be on the president's desk Monday morning, and probably this coming Monday will be signed into law. Well, that's quite remarkable. And never in the history of the United States has something been shoved through, crammed through so fast without even the slightest opportunity of reading it, much less scrutinizing it. But it's all for a reason. It's all being done for a reason, and that's something I'm going to touch on today and hopefully tie it into the last message. And maybe we'll be able to get a little clearer picture of what's happening and where we're going. One thing I would like to take note of here, I've got sitting in front of me the cover of this week's Newsweek. It's actually dated for 2 days from now, February 16th issue. But the leading cover of it, of Newsweek, says, "We are all socialist now." Isn't that interesting? This is a national magazine, and actually it tends to be a kind of a left-leaning or liberal type magazine, but nevertheless, this is what's on there. And the subtitle on it says, "In many ways, our economy already resembles a European one. As baby boomers age and spending grows, we will become even more French," it says. I will go ahead and read just one little section of it here, the second paragraph of it. It says, well, it's talking about at the outset interview with Sean Hannity, with a U.S. congressman. Sean Hannity is a news pundit or newscaster on Fox News. I watch him just about every night. He's a conservative, and of course, a lot of the liberals don't like him. But he's talking about where he has coined the phrase that this stimulus package is the European Socialist Act of 2009. But the article goes here, this is a Newsweek article, and the writers go on to say, there it was just before the commercial, the S word, you talk about socialism, a favorite among conservatives since John McCain began using it during the presidential campaign. Remember Joe the plumber? It goes on to say, but it seems strangely beside the point. This is the article here now. The U.S. government has already, under conservative Republican administration, effectively nationalized the banking and mortgage industries. That seems a stronger sign of socialism than $50 million for art, whether we want to admit it or not. And many, especially Congressman Pence and Hannity, do not. The America of 2009 is moving towards a modern European state. End of reading. That's all I'm going to read from there. But I thought that's interesting because that ties in exactly with what I said in my last message, that we really are heading that way, and what Dick Moore said in his letter about what President Bush did, and he signed over this, signed a law stating that this coming year that our government regulations and regulatory entities will be open to scrutiny by the year, by a world governing unit or world entity, and primarily this case being the European Union. And we've already seen evidence of that because they were, like I mentioned, were dabbling in this process, even though it was rushed through quickly, because one of the stipulations of this stimulus bill was to push the Buy American idea, which sounds good for Americans, but the Europeans did not like it. they do not like it, and they didn't want a part of it. So it's going to be interesting to see whether that clause was left into this package or not. Nobody will know until weeks or months down the road. But if it was left in there, then there's going to be strong contention against the European Union. I've been reading a lot of on the European news websites in the last few days, and all of their leading economic ministers are meeting around the clock. And one of the things that they're trying to do, because their economy is actually worse than the United States right now, Europe as a whole and the individual countries, and Germany in particular. Germany is almost in a state that it was in the 1930s, just prior to the rise of Hitler. And that's one reason why he was able to rise up, because they needed a strong leader and somebody to help pull them out of that economic mess. And that's going to happen again. He's going to be that strong man of Europe that Mr. Armstrong spoke so often of. And again, he was ahead of his time. So one of the things that the Europeans are trying to do frantically to try to prevent any further collapse is push this anti-protectionism idea through in their own governments. In other words, they want to help strengthen their own economy individually and collectively as the EU. They want to enforce trade. In other words, they're going to force trade on each other and on the world. So they're not only doing it with themselves, they're also trying to force the United States and other countries to make sure that they don't have a buy American only clause, or buy British, or buy South African clause. They want to make sure that the trade doors stay in the open position, forced open, where they are forced to buy and sell. Okay, of course, that really reminds me of something that, you know, I was going to mention this in my last message, because this is what it's all leading to. In Revelation chapter 13, in verse 16, it says there, he causes all, this is that beast power, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand and on their foreheads. And look at verse 17. And that no one may buy or sell, see, this is commerce or trade, no one may buy or sell except one has one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. And that's what this is all coming to. So we're actually seeing prophecy being fulfilled. In that sense, it's exciting. It can be overwhelming at times when you realize that it's actually happening. It's really happening now. So I want to touch on that today. And the title of this sermon will be The Mark of the Beast. And I will get to that shortly, but I just want to comment on a few things here first in the outset. That recall what I mentioned in the last message, where Mr. Armstrong had mentioned in the in 1975 in prophecy that this modern form of communism or socialism, whatever term you want to use now, is masquerading itself as a political party. And many of the leaders, from the late around the early 1900s on through the 20s and 30s. And even up to the onset and the aftermath of World War II, many of the communist leaders said that we are going to eventually dominate the United States. We just may do it in a covert fashion, in a way that you won't recognize it. We're going to infiltrate your society. You can go back and read some of these, not so much the Communist Manifesto, but some of the writings of leading communists over the years, and that's exactly what their philosophy has been all along. And so here we are today. Becoming a socialist society. And you see headlines all through the news now, and the headlines on Newsweek magazine, we are all socialists now. I have to wonder, if Mr. Armstrong were alive today, what would he be saying? You know, I warned of this, he would say. But yeah, I tell you, at this point, what I will do, speaking of that, I want to play a soundbite. I've got several soundbites today, half dozen or so, that I want to play. They all come from one sermon I was listening to the other day, from Mr. Armstrong. It's a 1983 sermon that he gave entitled The Mark of the Beast. I would highly recommend everyone to listen to that. If you don't have it, I'll make a way to post it on the website. And I may even make a separate page on the website soon concerning the beast, where I can put all the pertinent information here on there that Mr. Armstrong documented through sermons, through World Tomorrow broadcasts, and through his writings. Because now we're living in a time where very soon we're going to see that mark enforced. You need to know what it is and what it's not. And we need to also, and that's why I'm here, to show how we should be able to see the beginnings of the groundwork being laid now for it to be enforced. It's been around. It's been around for thousands of years, but it's going to be soon forced upon the American people. It's been forced upon countless people in the past in historical generations, but it's going to be enforced again very soon. And what I'm here to do is to show where it's beginning to creep into our society and how the foundation is being laid for it to happen again very soon, for it to be enforced. But I do want to play one little soundtrack here. Mr. Armstrong had stated about him being ahead of his time, because I know I mention it all the time, but I just thought there were several sound bites in this sermon that I had listened to from Mr. Armstrong, and there's quite a few in there that are pertinent for this time that we're in. And for any of those who have doubt that he stated these things, well, the proof is here. So here's the sound bite concerning him being ahead of his time.
Fifty years ago, I was putting emphasis on certain things where I was actually at least 50 years ahead of my time. You know, actually, the first century apostles were more than 1,950 years ahead of their time. They thought the second coming of Christ was going to occur way back there in their lifetime. And of course it didn't. But 50 years ago, I could see that we were coming into the last generation of this world.
Okay, so... But basically what he's saying there, that he was at least 50 years ahead of his time, and that's true, he was. Also, I'll play another one here in a moment. Let me set it up first, because one of the things that I quoted from my last message was 1975 in Prophecy, where Mr. Armstrong, you really should go back and read that, because we can see a lot of those things taking place today. He was ahead of his time, but one of the things that people often thought is that Mr. Armstrong was saying that in 1972 that he thought that Christ would return at that time. Well, he never said that, and I'll play a soundbite here now that shows what he did say, and also emphasize the fact that he never set dates, and neither do I, but we do, but he did always have the urgency to know that it could happen. He did say many times that it could happen in the months ahead or the next year or two, but he never set specific dates, but he always maintained that urgency because he saw what was going on behind the scenes and in the news, and he knew that for some reason God had been holding back world events. Well, now we're living in a time where there's not going to be any more delay, and God's not going to hold back anymore. So let's listen to this soundbite briefly.
Now, I can't set dates. And if it doesn't happen for 2 or 3 years from now, don't say how Mr. Armstrong said it was going to be in 1983. I didn't say that. I say it could. I didn't say it will. Now, if someone tries to say I said it, I've got to all use witnesses. I didn't. Because they tried to say back in 1972 that I said things I did not say. Some people thought I said the second coming of Christ was going to occur then. No, I could see reasons why I thought this empire might go together at that time.
Okay, so we can see that he's making it very clear there that he's talking about the European Union, or what he called the United States of Europe, and right now they just call themselves the European Union. So... what I'd like to do now, too, is just read something here from I sent many of you, brethren, yesterday a link to a YouTube video from Gerald Celente, who is a trend forecaster, and I just followed through. I have seen quite a few little interviews with him in the last year or two, and decided to go on his website, and he's got this magazine called The Trends Journal, and I went ahead and did a year subscription to it. I stayed up late reading it because it's very fascinating. He's been doing this since 1980. He doesn't try to prophesy. He doesn't do it in a religious way. In fact, he calls himself a political atheist. What that means is that he doesn't follow the Republican or Democratic ideology. He just wants to get the facts straight and then follow historical and current trends and try to forecast where we're going. He's been doing that very accurately since 1980. He's not a prophet. He does this primarily for business reasons, to help give information to businesses to grow or to formulate their growth plans. But what one, I want to read one little section here from it. Under the coming revolution, he thinks there's going to be a revolution coming pretty soon, a tax revolt and a government revolt, when the American people realize that they've been hoodwinked and bamboozled by this economic stimulus package, which will become law probably just in a matter of 48 hours from now, or give or take. But listen to what he says here, just an excerpt, a couple of paragraphs. It's interesting. He says, no longer the bastion of free market capitalism that created the conditions for its unbounded abundance, innovation, and opportunity, 21st century America has become its polar opposite. The evidence is indisputable. In less than a year, the entire economic structure upon which the system has been built was torn down, scuttled, and abandoned. Depending upon the definition applied to this mixed marriage of government and business, it may be seen as socialist, or communist, or fascist. What it is not capitalist or democratic. See, any longer. Pause from reading. Well, what we have seen happen, brethren, in the last 6 months at least, or this last year, and what we're seeing take place this very weekend with the passage of this new stimulus package, is exactly what he just said. In less than a year, our entire economic structure upon which this system had been built is torn down, scuttled, and abandoned. And he says it can be seen as socialist or communist or fascist. But we'll see in the coming weeks and months ahead to what degree, these are all different degrees of communism or that our socialist ideology. So we'll see as time goes on how radical it gets or doesn't get and how much the American people will take of it. He goes on to say, talk about this, it's no longer capitalist or democratic, and the people better get used to it, because there will be more to come. Following Washington's $150 billion plus bailout of Citigroup, President Bush, this is what Bush did now before he left, here's what President Bush proclaimed. We've made these, I remember seeing him on a news conference doing this. Mr. Bush said, we've made these kind of decisions in the past. We made one last night, and if need be, we're going to make this kind of decisions to safeguard our financial systems in the future, unquote. Well, they have. Since Mr. Bush has left office, now look what's happened. It's ballooned into a full, Mr. Bush got the ball rolling, as I mentioned in the last message, and now it's ballooning into full-scale socialism. Continue reading. He says, every decision made by the government to partner with a Wall Street firm or big business was done without the consent and or was against the wishes of the public, the very people who will be forced to pay for it. Think about that. Continue, he says, it is a matter of historical fact. When people are homeless, helpless, desperate, jobless, and hungry, sooner or later they will rebel. And it won't be any different in America. So he goes on to show where he thinks there's going to be a rebellion in the near future. And I can tell you that the government is already planning for that, because I may have mentioned it in some of my recent messages, but you can find it in the news sources. But as they're bringing some of these troops back from Iraq, they're not deactivating them. They're keeping them on alert and dispersing them throughout the United States to be called upon to supplement and help local law enforcement, because when this revolt begins to happen, or not so much even a revolt, whenever we start seeing massive amounts of people homeless and hungry, they begin to revert to chaos and desperation and do anything for food. And so the federal government's going to be helping the local governments in squashing this, what they will call a rebellion, which really is just people out of desperation looking for food or work or anything, their voices to be heard even. So the government is already planning for that, and you can read through different sources where they even have a secret detention camp. They're not even secret anymore because they've been videotaped on news channels. But there's various buildings and empty strip malls and malls around the United States that are being chained off and planned to be used as detention centers, or a older term for that would be concentration camp, to be used in the future to corral and herd large groups of people together for whatever purpose. So that's just all part of the program that's beginning to fall in place. But one of the things that I want to show throughout this message today is that the United States, this all has to do with God's Word and prophecy and what Mr. Armstrong taught, but what we're seeing in the large scheme of things is that the United States is being set up to be taken over by the European Union. See, and it's being done in the outset here by our adoption of socialist policies, see, the European socialism that I spoke of in the last message. So most what I'm going to show today, I don't think any forecaster or any news pundit or anyone has even pondered or considered, unless you're a true Christian that understands God's laws and God's truth and the revelation that he gave through his son Jesus Christ to his end time apostle. Then you should be able to begin to see what I'll be showing you today. And basically that is that we in this country are being set up to be taken over by the European Union, and not just us, but other Israelitist countries, but primarily the United States and Britain, taken over by the European Union. And it's being done in the outset by our adoption of socialist policies, which is really what many are terming European socialism. So we're softening ourselves up for that takeover without even realizing it. See, you think about that. As this depression that we're entering, and we really are, I believe, going already, if we're not there, in a depression. And what you won't hear on the news, you won't hear too many people saying we're in a depression until it's too late. And once they finally admit it, then it's too late, we're already there. Same with the recession of the last year or two. Many refused to say we were in a recession. And once they did admit it, then we're saying, oh yeah, we've been in recession for over a year. Well, we're going into a depression because it's getting really bad. But as this economic situation worsens, the ones who finance our bailout packages, because we don't have the money or anything to back the money to fund this, and primarily is China and Japan and some of the European countries. But some of those are going to begin to pull out. China even warned this week. They actually said twice in one statement that we hate you. We hate you, United States, for what you're doing to yourselves and to doing to us, because we're having to finance your bailouts. Well, China's having its own internal problems now because of lack of trade. We can't afford to bring in a lot of the Chinese imports now in the last few months. And so it's putting hundreds of thousands of Chinese factory workers out of work. So it's causing a economic problem within China. So it's a matter of time before they decide to pull out and stop financing us. Well, that's going to put the United States in a really weak situation, brethren and friends. So the only way that we could possibly finance then our bailouts is by printing money out of thin air, which they've been doing somewhat all along anyway. But to finance the tune of many trillions of dollars, what that will cause, if we have to do that out of thin air with nothing to back that money, it will cause not only inflation, but hyperinflation. And if you don't know what hyperinflation is, then do some search on the internet, because we will have that very soon, and it will skyrocket because we'll be trying to finance these bailouts by printing money that has no backing. So one thing that will happen at that time, and we're beginning to be get there now with our socialist policies, we're going to be ripe, R-I-P-E, we're going to be ripe for a European bailout, see? And we're already under their influence. So more and more, we will come under European influence in government, and we're already in policies, and we already are beginning to do that now. I mentioned that in the last message, but it is happening. They're having more and more influence, and as the Europeans begin to restructure their economic policies, they're going to make sure that it's enforced on the rest of the world. And as they do this, they're going to also realize that they are the largest, and they have been, the largest trading bloc and economic bloc in the world. And then they'll begin to enforce that power. So that is the beast power. So that ties up back into what I read there from the Bible in Revelation 13, verse 16 and 17, that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. And I want to discuss that here shortly. But one of the things that will follow immediately on the heels of that is the prophesied captivity of our people. Now, think about this. There are two ways that a nation as a whole, or even a group of people, or even an individual, for that matter, can be taken captive. And the first way, there's more than two ways, but these are two general ways. This came to mind when I was tossing these thoughts around trying to prepare for this, but there's two primary ways that we can become captive or go into captivity. The first way was the most obvious way, and that's by force. That's by downright military force invasion and taken captive, just like you see, in the movies. And the second way is by surprise. See, by surprise or covert activity that's not readily apparent. In other words, it's a trap, like a trap that springs shut. So now, one thing I don't think we'll see in the outset is someone coming right in and trying to take this country by force, because you would see a lot of old-time patriotism and what I call redneck patriotism. It'd be hard for another country to take this country by force in the outset. However, it can be taken by surprise. And I think that's what we're going to see happen. And it's already begun to happen. Not the captivity, but the setting up and the foundational policies that will lead to that, because we're being weakened from within. See, remember Mr. Armstrong mentioned that in that 1975 in prophecy. We're being weakened from within, and everything from our government to educational policies, everything, every part of society. And primarily now it's our economy, which affects the movement of everything. So we're being set up for a surprise, or being caught in a trap. And I meant to bring out here with me the letter Mr. Armstrong wrote. I've read it many times. It's documented in volume 2 of his autobiography, where he talks about when these things come together, it's going to be like a trap springing shut on a hapless rat. See, and that's what we're going to see happen, because once it happens and the trap is set and snaps shut, it's too late. It is too late then. So, what I want to discuss is this mark of the beast. And unfortunately, many of God's own people have already gone back to keeping that mark of the beast, which is Sunday worship, the enforcement of Sunday. Now, there are many concepts today of what the mark of the beast is or isn't, and many of professing traditional Christianity have their ideas, everything from microchips to an actual 666 branded into your hand and forehead, or any number of things, or mandatory government ID cards or driver's license. There's all kinds of ideas of what the mark of the beast is or isn't. But the Bible interprets itself, and God gave many years ago the revelation and truth to his apostle, Mr. Armstrong, to document what this mark of the beast is and what it has been. And that's what I want to discuss here. But many of God's own people that were once, or that organization that's called the Worldwide Church of God, many of those have willfully turned their backs on God and his laws and have accepted that mark of the beast already and gone back to willfully keeping it. So what I'd like to do at this point is read from a booklet from Mr. Armstrong, entitled The Mark of the Beast. And actually, you can find it in the book entitled Who or What is the Prophetic Beast. It's actually the second half of it. And what this is, it actually used to be a separate booklet on its own many years ago. It was originally written in the early 50s. And then later on, in the 60s and early 70s, they just incorporated the Mark of the Beast booklet in with Who and What is the Prophetic Beast. And I would advise reading all that together. But what I want to concentrate on today is the mark of the beast. Because that's what's coming. That is what's coming, friends and brethren. And it's just a matter of time before we're caught in it and as a nation. And hopefully, by the grace of God, at that time, some will be taken away from it to a final place of training or a place of safety. So let me begin to read here. What is this mark of the beast? And actually, I think before I do, I want to play one more soundbite from this sermon from Mr. Armstrong, where he basically states in here, we know that the tribulation is the wrath of Satan, and certain things are going to cause it under Satan's influence. But here Mr. Armstrong makes a specific statement about what actually causes the tribulation, and he says it's actually the European Union, or the EU, or the United States of Europe, however he termed it. So let me play this soundbite real quick before I begin reading.
The Great Tribulation is going to be brought on by this United States of Europe. It's not going to come by Russia, but by them. They will be a greater power than Russia or the United States.
Okay, so basically he just makes that statement that it will be caused by the United States of Europe. That's very interesting, because what we see happening in the news today, and you don't have to really search too hard to find the evidence. So let me begin reading here. This is the title of the book. It says, The Mark of the Beast. It is here now. You better be sure whether this brand is upon you. Without it, no man will be able to buy or sell. And without it, you may be tortured even to death. But with it, you shall suffer the seven last plagues of God. Okay, that was just the title and subtitle, so I'll start reading from the actual booklet. Mr. Armstrong says, excuse me, some used to say this mystic mark was the faces on the old United States dime during World War II, and many said it was Hitler's swastika during the Depression, the New Deal. Many said it was Roosevelt's NRA. No subject has been more intriguing and baffling to our generation. Thousands of sermons have been preached on it by professed ministers and evangelists who themselves did not know what it is. Millions have been curious. The average sermon on this subject considers one text of Scripture only. And the only, and he quotes this only text used, and it says, it's Revelation 13, 16 through 17, which I read to you earlier. And he, the second beast, causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark on their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man may buy or sell, say that he has the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. And that's the same scripture I read to you earlier. He says, from this one passage, the speaker customarily uses his imagination. One might reason that since you will not be able to buy or sell without this mysterious mark, and since we all wish to be able to buy and sell, therefore we ought to do all in our power to receive this mark. But here is an additional passage they neglect to show. And he reads from Revelation 15 and 16, and it says, I saw another angel in heaven, great and marvelous, seven angels having the seven last plagues, for in them is filled up the wrath of God. And the seven angels came out of the temple having the seven plagues. And I heard a great voice out of the temple saying to the seven angels, go your ways and pour out the vials of the wrath of God upon the earth. And the first went and poured out his vial upon the earth, and there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast, and upon them which worship his image. That's from Revelation 15, verse 1 and 6, and Revelation 16, verses 1 and 2. Mr. Armstrong says, if you do have the mark of the beast, you will receive the seven last plagues, and they will be terrible, terrible beyond description. How to tell what it is? He says, there are many more references to this subject in the Bible. Instead of looking at one passage only, then turning away from God's own revelation of this mystery and using human imagination and fancy to conjure up the many ridiculous conclusions being foisted upon a deceived public by persons devoid of understanding, let us see what God says this mark really is. Pause from reading. Let's see, that's exactly what we want to always do. What does God say about it, whatever the subject is, see? Is on the internet today, or there's many thousands of ideas out there what the mark of the beast is, and guess what? They're all wrong. God revealed a long time ago through his servant what that mark is, and it's is from God's Word. The Bible, remember, the Bible always interprets itself. Continue reading. Make no mistake, God tells us plainly what it is. It is unmistakably clearly revealed and explained in the Bible. But to find God's answer, we must have before us all of the scriptures referring to this subject. First, from the that's how you always pause from reading. That's how you always study a subject. So you gather all the scriptures on it and get the proper context. First, from the text universally quoted, Revelation 13, verses 16 and 17, notice this. The mark, M-A-R-K, is something that will be very popular, something the majority of the people will be in favor of, will seek, which custom will approve as right. We'll pause from reading. Think about that, and think about what's going on with our government today and with this worldwide economic crisis, and think about what the European Union is doing today behind the scenes with trying to stabilize their economy and for the sake of economic stability in their mind, because at this point I don't believe they don't intend any harm or evil at this point anyway, but for the sake of economic stability they're trying to make sure that the whole world's economy is regulated by a single entity. See, and that's what this is leading to. And so whenever it's going to look good in the eyes of people who are in economic chaos as our country falls further and further into depression and other parts of the world and many other economies, they're going to be looking for some kind of economic stability. See, and so Mr. Armstrong says here that the mark is something that will be very popular, something the majority of people will be in favor of, will seek, which custom will approve as right. But once you understand what that mark is, of course it is the enforcement of Sunday worship, but you understand what is the behind that mark, what was backing up that mark, and that is that great beast power, that European power, and they're going to do it under the pretext of, well, you cannot buy or sell, you cannot conduct commerce or business unless you have this mark. See, so if you, once you have this mark, oh, that's not a problem, I'll keep that mark as long as I can keep my job. Yeah, no problem. You know, I'll take Sunday off and work the rest of the week if I can feed my family. So see, pretty much already universally it's being accepted as it is anyway. So the next step would be to enforce it as a law. And already, I'll just inject something here real quick. There's another soundbite I want to play because I have a comment to make on that. Let me see here. Let me play this comment and then we'll talk about it. It has to do with what's going on has been going on in Germany since the early 80s with the enforcement of Sunday worship and other laws. But let's listen to what Mr. Armstrong has to say about this. This was in 1983 now.
Just recently in Germany, there has been a new law passed that the holy days to be observed as rest days or national holidays are to be decided by the church, and they must be either Roman Catholic or Protestant. And each state, like Bavaria or other states within Germany, can decide what they want. And whatever they decide, the people have to follow.
Okay. So now, that's interesting. That was in 1983. Well, I was in Germany in the 70s, but I was also there in the late 80s. I was there in 1989 when that, during that, I wasn't in Berlin, but I was there at the same time that the Berlin Wall came down, ironically, at an Air Force base there as a civilian. And interestingly enough, I was mentioning to my wife that I remember riding around with this German civil servant who worked on an American base there, and all the commercial vehicles and even the private vehicles, but mainly any commercial vehicles that you used to work out of, had this little machine up on a steering column, and it looked like a time slot card that goes in there, and they got it rigged to where you can't even crank it up and run the automobile unless this time slot card is shoved into this slot, and what it does is keep track of the hours that you drive, what days you drive, in the one of the purposes of that is that there's a German law that states, that's what Mr. Armstrong was referring to, 5 years prior to that, and then when I was there, it was already enforced, and that was that, and this man was telling me, that if you get caught driving on Sunday and they check your car, you have to turn your cards in every so often and they check it, that you'll be fined or ticketed for driving on Sunday. And now, of course, it's all gone digital. They don't have the little time slot cards now. It's all digitalized, built into the dash of the vehicles, and it's all reported through GPS and satellite and all that. So there's no way to get around it. But ironically, I just saw in the news, what made me think of this, what I saw in the news here locally in the United States here over the last month or so, and it has a lot to do with this bailout of our automobile industry, because the government wants to force the major automakers to start making more fuel-efficient cars and hybrid cars and all this, and to meet more strict government standards. But one of the things that was being tossed around to be put into law was a digital device that goes into a car, and that it's similar to like you see in cars today with a little GPS mapping device or satellite radio type thing. But it's a digital device, computer-based, that actually does the same thing. It keeps track of your driving time, how far you drive, where you're located, what days you drive. So if they begin to put, and of course their premises behind that was to help you to become more fuel efficient in your driving habits. Uh-huh, right. What that really does is Big Brother has a way, or the government has a way, to monitor everything you do and where you're at. So if that law goes into effect, and it could be in this stimulus bill, because there's so much in there that even our lawmakers aren't even aware of, that then here we'll have the same basic thing that Germany has had since the 80s, and it's a way of forcing you to work on certain days or not allowing you to work on other days because you'll be fined for it, or who even knows what other kind of law they will penalize you with if you're caught driving on a day they told you not to. So I thought that was interesting. That Mr. Armstrong was talking about this law in 1983 that they had just passed, and it was 5 years later when I was there in 89, 5 or 6 years later, that it was actually being fully enforced in all commercial vehicles. And I heard that they were going to begin doing it in private vehicles as well. So, but they do that here in the United States with commercial and private vehicles. Under the pretext of just helping you to have safer driving habits and being more fuel efficient in your driving. Well, that may be a pretext for doing it, but it's really to monitor your activities more than anything. So I thought that was interesting, because back to reading here, he says the mark is something that will be very popular, something the majority of people will be in favor of, will seek, which custom will approve as right. Well, that's already being done with the keeping of Sunday in this nation and many other nations, because like Mr. Armstrong said in that soundbite just now, that lot those laws are primarily being pushed through by Catholics or Protestants, which keep the same days, see. Continue reading. He says, everyone wants to be able to buy or sell. This scriptural usage, the expression of buy or sell, literally indicates being able to buy, not that stores or those from whom one might make purchases of the necessities of life would refuse to accept the money, but that the one refusing the mark would not be able to buy, would not be able to earn a living, to earn a wage or salary, or to engage himself in business. The mark of the beast, then, has direct bearing on the ability to engage in business or to hold a job and earn a living. But let's look at all the facts God reveals on the subject, all the scriptures bearing on it. What is the beast? First, then, the beast itself. The mark is the mark of the beast. This is described in the first verses of this chapter. In this Revelation 13, and it says, I stood upon the sand of the sea, records John, speaking of his prophetic vision, and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was likened to a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power, and his seat and great authority. Okay, that's the end of that quote. He goes on to say, the identity of this weird beast was revealed in part one of this booklet. That was the first half of this booklet of who and what is the prophetic beast. Daniel 7 reveals that these beasts, plural, or wild animals symbolize civil governments. See, they symbolize civil governments or world empires. Daniel's first beast was like a lion, and it represented the Chaldean empire of Nebuchadnezzar, called Babylon. His second, like a bear, pictured the Persian Empire. His third, with four heads, like a leopard, represented Alexander's Greco-Macedonian Empire in his succeeding four divisions after his death. And his fourth beast, unlike any existing wild animal, the Roman Empire, which swallowed up and absorbed all the others and embodied the strongest physical and military characteristics of all his predecessors. This beast of Revelation 13 had the mouth, the strongest part of the lion, the feet, the strongest part of the bear, the body of the leopard. It included, in the one empire, it represents the strength of all of Daniel's beasts. It is the Roman Empire. Notice the dragon gave this empire its seat and power and great authority. Revelation 12, verse 9 and 20, verse 2, both tell us in plain words this dragon is Satan the devil. It is, then, the political instrument of Satan in ruling and deceiving the world. Okay, the next subtitle here is, whose mark? Question mark. Mr. Armstrong says, note this well. The mark is the mark of the beast, and the beast is the Roman Empire. In Revelation 17, a later stage of this same wild beast is pictured, and there a woman, a great church, sits astride it, guides it, rules over it. But the mark is the mark of the Roman Empire, not the Roman Catholic Church. See, it's part of the empire. That is factor number one. Keep that in mind. Now, in verse 11 of Revelation 13, another beast is pictured. This beast had two horns, like a lamb, but spoke as a dragon. This second beast of Revelation 13 is also pictured in Revelation 17 as the harlot woman who rode the beast. This fallen woman or church is different from all other churches in one respect. She is organized as a civil government as well as an ecclesiastical church. Nations of the world send ambassadors to her, the same as they do the capitals of other nations. This church, just as the woman riding an animal, guides and directs the animal, like, for example, a woman riding a horse, took over, exercised, wielded all the power of the first beast, the Roman Empire. After A.D. 554, the church, this false church, did do this for 1260 years as prophesied. Notice further Revelation 13, verse 15 and 16. It says, and he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he causes all to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. That's Revelation 13, verse 15 and 16. Now, here is a deceived church, both herself deceived by and therefore used by the devil, and also deceiving the world. Notice, this church did not actually herself kill these martyrs. She merely caused them to be killed. And she it was, too, who causes all under her domination to receive the mark of the beast. Now, this next subtitle is interesting. Considering the scriptures, the brand of Rome, Mr. Armstrong says, notice carefully what the above that this text tells us. Number one, he, that's the leader who originated human civil government, model after that of the Roman Empire in the church. Number two, causes all to receive this mark. He's putting emphasis on the words here. Number one was he. The second one was causes all to receive the mark. It is the church, not the civil government, which forces this brand on people. Number three, it is the same power which caused the martyrdom of saints. Number four, it brands on the people the mark of the beast. That is, the mark of the Roman Empire, not the mark of the church. Number five, this mark is received in the right hand and in the forehead. So the mark is that of the Roman Empire, which this church did cause or shall cause the Western world to receive. Interesting. It's coming, my friends. Now he talks about two martyrdoms. Next, notice when these saints were killed. This will show us when the mark of the beast is enforced. And when he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altars the souls of them that were slain for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And they cried out with a loud voice, saying, How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? That's Revelation chapter 6, verses 9 and 10. Mr. Armstrong says, here we find pictured the martyrs of the Middle Ages already dead at the time of this vision, which is the approximate present. They know vengeance is mine, saith the Eternal. They know God's judgments against the persecuting, deceiving, false church, as described in Revelation 18, are to be the seven last plagues poured out in the presence of the Lamb at the second coming of Christ. Read of it in Revelation chapter 18. These dead saints are pictured as crying out to ask how long before the second coming of Christ and the seven last plagues, which shall avenge their martyrdom. History tells us that in the Middle Ages, more than 50 million were killed, many for their Bible faith and for in obedience to God instead of obedience to this church government of man and the devil. Notice now what must happen again before the seven last plagues and coming of Christ. And he reads here from Revelation chapter 6, verse 11, and it says, And white robes, symbolizing righteousness and purity, were given unto every one of them, and it was said unto them that they should rest yet a little season until their fellow servants also, and their brethren that should be killed as they were, should be fulfilled. Christ will not come to take vengeance on this great false church until another great martyrdom has taken place. And pay attention here, because this is what's ahead of us, friends and brethren, in this coming time. This tribulation is about to spring upon this world. Note it. There was one martyrdom. Those saints are already killed. Their resurrection will occur when Jesus returns to earth, when his judgments are poured out on this false Babylon and her daughter churches. But there is yet to be another universal persecution and martyrdom of saints just prior to Christ's coming and vengeance against the forces of evil. Here are two universal martyrdoms. This coming great martyrdom is the great tribulation of Matthew 24, verse 9 and 21 through 22. This tribulation is not the wrath of God, the last plagues. It is the wrath of Satan, inflicted at the behest of his apostate church by the coming United States of Europe and against the true people of God. We'll pause from reading. That's what I just played to you in that soundbite earlier, that Mr. Armstrong says emphatically that this tribulation will be caused by the United States of Europe, this coming beast power or European Union. But he says, he makes it very clear, it's the wrath of, I'll read it again, it's the wrath of Satan, because that great tribulation is the time of Satan's wrath, is the wrath of Satan inflicted at the behest of his apostate church by the coming United States of Europe and against the true people of God. It is a persecution, a torturing, a martyring of the saints of God, the very elect who cannot be deceived. Matthew 24, verse 24. Except those days of great tribulation be shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the sake of God's persecuted saints, those days shall be shortened. God shall intervene. Christ shall come quickly. Well, pause from reading. Well, I've been saying this for several years now, warning God's people that the vast majority of God's people are going to be caught in the tribulation if they don't repent. And the time is running out, and many of them are still in their comfort zones. And pretty soon they will have the mark of the beast forced upon them. And then they will have to be making a very hard decision. We're going to have to face it, all of us, anyway, brethren. I want to play a soundbite here at this point. It's a good time to do it. It's another statement from this sermon from Mr. Armstrong, and it's a warning about this coming mark of the beast, and it's a warning to, it was a sermon to the church, to God's people, so this applies to every one of us, because what he says in here is something that's about to take place very soon. I don't know exactly when, but we can see the signs of it now being set up, and so this is something you need to always remember.
This whole system of Gentile governments began with Nebuchadnezzar. And now we find the last resurrection of it is coming up, and it means something to you and me. And the mark of the beast is something that's going to be enforced, and you are going to risk your life on it in the very near future. In speaking of these very same things, Jesus said, "He that hath an ear, let him hear." And I say to you, if you have ears to hear, you better hear and you better understand. And don't take this lightly, because your life is going to be at stake. I'm going to tell you, one of two things is going to have to happen to you, every one of you, and we're going to face it collectively as a church, but each is going to face it individually also. You're going to be tested. If you try to save your life, you lose it for all eternity. You may have to give your present life in order to make the kingdom of God. Are you going to try to live on and save it? Are you willing? There's one place in the 12th chapter of Revelation where, after Satan has had the battle in heaven once again and has been sent back down to earth, where the saints loved not their lives unto death. And that's speaking of our time and our people and those of the Laodicean church to follow us almost immediately.
Okay, well, did that get anyone's attention out there? That's a very stern warning that every one of us, collectively as a church, but also individually, we're going to be faced with a decision in the near future, see? So he was talking to the Philadelphia era of God's church in 1983 at that time, and he knew that God's people were going to be tested, every single one of us. So part of my thrust to this message is, where are you going to stand? Where are you going to stand? Because if you haven't been tested on it, as many of us have over the years, because many of God's people today have to, in some cases, take lesser jobs because of not being able to work on the Sabbath. But God always blesses us anyway and provides. He always does. Didn't promise to make us rich. He promised to prosper us, which is to provide and to make sure you do well. That's what prosper means, is to do well. And so many of us do if we follow those laws of God. But it was interesting the way he put that, thundered that warning to us, and it applies today, because now we're living into that time that he said many times, for some reason God is holding back these events. Well, now they're not going to be held back anymore, brethren. They're beginning to fall into place very rapidly. Let me continue reading now. Okay, I'll continue reading. The next subtitle is The Mark Then and Now. It says, now compare with these scriptures. In Revelation 17, picturing the same church as the woman riding the beast, John writes, "And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus," verse 6. Also Revelation 20, verse 4, "And I saw thrones and they that sat upon them, and judgment was given to them, and I saw the souls of them that were beheaded for the witness of Jesus and for the word of God, and which had not worshipped the beast, neither his image, neither had received his mark upon their foreheads or in their hands, and they lived and reigned with Christ 1,000 years. Now we see why these many millions were and shall be martyred. It was because they refused to receive this mark of the beast, refused to join in this worship of church and empire. They obeyed God rather than man. Their lives were governed by God. They were called out of this world, no longer any part of this world. They were the children, the heirs, or future citizens of his kingdom, not the kingdoms of men. But note it well, they were, as God commands, subject to the government of man. They did not resist. They yielded themselves subject to the penalty. They were tortured. They were killed. But they obeyed the government of God rather than man, where there was conflict." See, I'm going to point out something about that here shortly. "And at Christ's coming to rule the world as King of Kings, they shall be all lesser priests and kings under him and rule the world. Do you see what this plainly reveals? Those martyrs over 1,000 years ago were killed because they would not worship the church, conform to its idolatry and pagan beliefs and customs, or worship the so-called Holy Roman Empire, and because they refused to receive the mark of the beast. This means the mark of the beast is something that was forced on people. See, forced on people, on pain of being killed more than 1,000 years ago. The mark of the beast was in full existence and enforcement over 1,000 years ago. But since it is those who have the mark of the beast who shall suffer the seven last plagues at Christ's coming, the dreadful mark is once again to be enforced. And those who refuse it are those who shall be martyred in the coming tribulation. Now we begin to find the real light shed on this baffling question. Well, that's interesting there, because he points out those that will refuse it will be many of God's people, because then they're going to wake up. See, Mr. Armstrong said many times that the Laodicean church, singular, one church, will rise up and out of the tribulation. Well, that's the time when many of God's people wake up and they realize that the so-called watered-down church of God that they belong to has been leading them astray, and now they're caught in the tribulation, and their only way out is to refuse that mark of the beast and to die as martyrs. I want to play another soundbite here from this message from Mr. Armstrong, because it talks about something that I've been touching on here at the outset of this message, which is basically a coming police state that our country is going to be going into, and we're going to be taken over by a larger police state. So at this time, let me play that, and then I'll comment on that.
Now, beginning with verse 9. And there were now two angels with messages, and the third angel followed them, saying, voice, if any man worship the beast and his image, and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand. Here it is again about the mark of the beast. The same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation, and he shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb at the second coming of Christ. If you do not receive the mark of the beast, you may be martyred. If you do receive the mark of the beast, then this is going to happen to you, and you, brethren, every one of you may personally, in the next 1.5, 2, 5 years, maybe 10 years, I can't set a date, but it's very, very imminent now, and the time has come to warn. You're going to have to make a decision. You better know what is the mark of the beast. Satan is a great deceiver. I want you to notice there are two classes. One will have the mark, and they will be martyred, and you, many things are going to happen to you by the police and the police state, and they're going to take over this country if you're not killed in the war and the famine and the pestilence that's coming and prophesied to come almost any time now. Then you're going to face this.
Okay. And what he was quoting there from, it's interesting that he talks again about us having to make a decision. He was quoting from, I meant to mention that ahead of time, he was quoting from Revelation chapter 14, verses 9 and 10, which says, then a third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast in his image and receives his mark on his forehead or on his hand, he himself shall also drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out full strength into the cup of his indignation. That's what Mr. Armstrong was commenting on in that soundbite on those two verses. But I thought it was interesting he talked about the coming police state, and we should be able to see that what's going on behind the scenes now with this economic collapse. The government is making contingency plans that if their economic stimulus package, so-called, doesn't work, then they've got Plan B, which is to call out their military, National Guard, to help reinforce local law enforcement to squelch any rebellion or riots that may ensue because people are in desperation. It's just the times we're living in, see. And now we're seeing these things fall together. Okay, let me get back to the booklet here and continue reading. The next subtitle, Mr. Armstrong, is called The Warning of the Third Angel, which we're going to touch on, what we just mentioned. He says, soon now the time is coming when gross spiritual darkness will cover this earth, when no human will be permitted to preach Christ's true gospel. We must work while it is day. The night is fast drawing on when no man can work for God. At that time, God shall send angels with his final warning to these apostate nations under sway of this great deceiving church as a final witness against them. Three such angel messages are foretold in Revelation chapter 14. Notice the final warning of the third angel. It says what we just read, Revelation 14, verse 9 and 10. If any man worship the beast in his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, the seven last plagues, full force, unmixed with mercy. This shows that although the mark was branded on all but the martyrs over 1,000 years ago, it is still the brand of traditional Christianity today, and once again to be enforced. Once again, those who refuse it shall be martyred, but those who receive it shall suffer the wrath of God without mercy. You must soon choose whom you will obey. This coming Roman Empire, resurrected by a United States of Europe, ruled by traditional Christianity, or whether you shall obey God. Well, that is what's coming. And at that time, of course, that's a time when no man can work for God, so God has to send these three angels out with this thunderous message. Okay, next subtitle is The Mark of Obedience. Let me get in now to the specifics of what the mark is. We begin now to see that the mark of the beast involves a point of obedience, whether we shall obey God or reject the commandment of God and obey man's rule. It has something to do, then, with the commandment of God. Notice there, actually, I want to interject something right here, because he mentions back over in his previous page that I read 5 or 10 minutes ago, when he was talking about those martyrs thousands of years ago, it says they obeyed God rather than man. Their lives were governed by God. They were called out of this world, no longer any part of this world. They were the children, the heirs, the future citizens of his kingdom. He says, but note it well, they were, as God commands, subject to the government of man. They did not resist. They yielded themselves subject to the penalty. They were tortured and they were killed. But they obeyed the government of God rather than man, where there was conflict. Well, I wanted to go back to that and comment real quick, because I want to emphasize what's going on with our government today, and some people are going to blame President Bush for this, what's about to happen. Some are going to blame President Obama for what's about to happen, and it really doesn't matter who the man is there, because if you look in Daniel chapter 4, verse 17, let's just take a moment and go there. Some are going to blame Obama for this collapse. Some are blame George Bush, or a combination of both of them. But it doesn't matter, because we're living in a time where God's beginning to intervene in the affairs of man. And so whoever the poor president is, that's the way I term it, it's God's plan is going to be fulfilled. But in Daniel chapter 4, and notice verse 7, and this is what I tell people whenever I explain to them why we don't vote. This chapter 4 of Daniel, in verse 17, it says here, this decision is by the decree of the watchers, and the sentence by the word of the holy ones, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of man, and gives it to whomever he will, and sets it over the lowest of men. And so if you look at and I'll turn back a couple of chapters to chapter 2, in chapter 2 of Daniel, and notice verse 20, it says, Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his, and he changes the times and seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. See? He removes gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. So it's the great God who removes and raises up kings or leaders. And notice back also in chapter 4, We just read verse 17 there, but drop down to verse 25. It says, they shall drive you from men. Your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like ox, and they shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you till you know that the Most High, this is what Daniel's telling Nebuchadnezzar, until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of man and gives it to whomever he chooses. So it's God that is allowing these things to happen. And when the time comes for it to happen, it doesn't matter who's in office. God chooses the person in office, whether it's a president of a nation or a king of a nation, to fulfill his purpose and his plan. It's always to fulfill his purpose and his plan. Yes, he allows Satan to have certain influences on policies and procedures and all this. So my point is we can't blame Mr. Obama or Mr. Bush or point the finger, because it's out of their control. It is out of their control. The things that are set in motion by the great God, or no puny man can control it. So the governments that hold power do so only as God allows it. And then while they do that, we are instructed to be subject to those governments. That's in Romans chapter 13, verse 1. We do need to be subject to the governments. However, when it begins to have a conflict with the laws of God, and that's what we're going to see in the near future more and more with this mark of the beast and other policies and other procedures that are coming through in this socialist program, when it begins to have a conflict with the laws of God, then we should obey God rather than man. You can find that in Acts chapter 5, verse 29. Actually, we can just turn, just put it down in your notes, Acts chapter 5, verse 29. So that's been traditionally the teaching of the church for many years, way back under Mr. Armstrong. We're subject to the laws of this land, and we want to live in peace and do no one any harm. But whenever the government begins to interfere with and forces you to have a choice between the laws of the land and the laws of God, we should always obey God rather than man. And so we're going to see more and more of that being put to test as things begin to snowball around us. And many of God's people, unfortunately, are going to choose not to obey God. And many already have chosen that. Okay, so I need to go back to what I was reading here. The mark of obedience, we begin now to see, Mr. Armstrong says, that the mark of the beast involves a point of obedience, whether we shall obey God or reject the commandment of God and obey man's rule. See, what I just mentioned, it has something to do then with the commandments of God, with a commandment of God. Notice, there are in general two classes. One has the mark, the other rejects it and is martyred. Notice now the description of those who refuse this evil mark. And this is from Revelation chapter 14, verse 12. Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus. There it is, he says. In verses 9 and 11 of this chapter, the third angel warns that those who have the mark of the beast shall be punished by the plagues of God. In the next verse, the 12th, of the saints who do not have the mark are those who keep the commandments of God. Those who have the mark, therefore, are those who refuse to keep the commandments of God. The mark of the beast, therefore, involves a rejection of the commandments of God, or of one of them. For if we break one, we are guilty of all of them. That's what it says in James chapter 2, verse 10. So one class of people accepts the mark of the beast. The other class keeps the commandments of God. Next subtitle, a mark of disobedience. Hence, whatever the mark of the beast may be, it means disobedience to God's government, to the commandments of God. Here's further proof. Here are they who get victory over this mark. Notice what it says in Revelation chapter 15, verses 2 and 3. It says, and I saw as it were a sea of glass mingled with fire, and them that had gotten the victory over the beast, and over his image, and over his mark, and over the number of his name, stand on the sea of glass, having the harps of God, and they sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, great and marvelous are thy works, Lord God Almighty, just and true are thy ways, thou King of saints. This corresponds to the children of Israel delivered from Egyptian bondage under Moses. Moses was a type of Christ. Pharaoh was the type and forerunner of this beast. The plagues God poured out on Egypt were a type of the last plagues to be poured out on Babylon. The children of Israel stood on the shore of the Red Sea, and God miraculously delivered them. Here, the saints of God are pictured on this symbolic sea of glass. They sing the song of Moses, the song of the Lamb, which is Christ. Moses pictures law and God's commandments. The Lamb, Christ, pictures faith and salvation from sin. Remember, the beast is the human civil organization of the devil. In Revelation 12, we find Satan stirred to great wrath because he knows that he has but a short time. Verse 12, he then starts a great persecution or tribulation against the true church, the true saints of God. This is just prior to the second coming of Christ. That's in verse 10. Now notice against whom Satan is so wroth or wrathful. It says, he's reading from verse 17, and the dragon, which is Satan, was wroth with the woman, the church, and he went to make war with the remnant, that's the last generation of her seed, which keeps the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. In other words, the Bible. There it is again, Mr. Armstrong says, those keeping God's commandments, those yielding themselves to God's rule and living by every word of God, by the Bible, which is the written testimony of Jesus Christ, they are the ones the devil will persecute and martyr through this false church and his reborn empire. But Satan knows his own. He will brand his own with a mark, so they shall not receive this persecution and martyrdom. Think about this, see? Satan knows his own. He will brand his own with a mark, so that they shall not receive this persecution and martyrdom, even as God put a mark on sinning Cain, lest men finding him slay him. That's in Genesis 4, verse 15. Those in the world who do not receive Satan's brand, the mark of the beast, will suffer Satan's wrath in their tribulation. Thank God those days shall be cut short for the elect's sake. Okay, when I go to the next subsection here, the class on whom the plagues fall. There are two classes of people. He's mentioned this several times. That class which receives the mark of the beast is the class upon whom the plagues of God will fall. So if we can further identify those who shall receive this wrath of God and why God will thus punish them, we shall further identify what the mark is. In Ephesians 5, Paul is telling Christians to flee fornication, covetousness, idolatry, transgressing the Ten Commandments. Then he says, for because of these things, which is transgressing God's law, comes the wrath of God, or the last plagues, upon the children of disobedience. That's in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 6. How plain, Mr. Armstrong says, the wrath of God, the seven last plagues, is coming on those who disobey God by violating the commandments. The plagues fall upon those who have the mark of the beast. Those who receive the plagues are the breakers of God's commandments and also at the same time receivers of the mark. It becomes more and more plain that the mark of the beast represents commandment breaking. See, commandment. The mark of the beast represents commandment breaking. Notice this again in Colossians chapter 3, verses 5 and 6. It says, mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanliness, inordinate affection, evil conspicuousness, and covetousness, which is idolatry or transgressions of some of the Ten Commandments, for which things sake the wrath of God comes on the children of disobedience. Notice it also in the prophecies of the Old Testament. The great day of the Lord, that's the time of God's wrath, the last plagues, is near. That day is a day of wrath, a day of trouble and distress, and I, God, will bring distress upon men that they shall walk like blind men, that's like the plagues, because they have sinned against the eternal. That's in Zephaniah chapter 1, verse 14 through 17. What is sin? Sin is a transgression of the law. That's 1 John 3, verse 4. Okay, commandment breaking. Okay, this is next subtitle. It begins to lay it all out. He says, the truth becomes plain. Now let's recapitulate. The truth is becoming plain. Number one, the mark plainly means the rejecting and breaking of God's commandments. And in James chapter 2, verse 10 and 11, God says, if we break only one of the commandments, we are guilty of breaking the law, guilty of all. Number two, the Roman Empire is the real author of this mark. It is the mark of the beast, not the woman who rode the beast. Number three, the church caused people to be deceived into receiving this mark. Number four, Satan gave this Roman Empire its seat and great authority. It is the political instrument through which Satan works in deceiving the whole world. Number five, those who refuse this mark are prohibited from buying or selling, engaging in commerce, trade, or holding a job. Interesting the way he words that there. Those who refuse this mark are prohibited from buying or selling, in other words, engaging in commerce, trade, or holding a job. Number six, many of those refusing this mark were and shall again be martyred because of their refusal, because they keep the commandments of God. Number seven, therefore, the inevitable and plain conclusion is that the mark is something enforced by the church, that's the false church, originating in the paganism of the Roman Empire, which a cunning, deceiving devil would seize on as a means of cleverly deceiving people into breaking God's Ten Commandments. And it involves a direct connection with holding a job, engaging in business, or earning a living. Satan is clever, cunning, a deceiver. He palms off counterfeits which look like the genuine. Naturally, he would select the one commandment of God which he can counterfeit with a substitute, one in which by human reason alone no man could see would make any difference. He would select the one which would seem of least importance to the carnal human mind. Isn't that interesting? He would not try to deceive men on idolatry or profanity or on stealing or lying or murder or adultery, though he has led people into all of these. But what commandment could it be? What commandment affecting a man's job or his business? There is only one possible commandment, the one regarded by the largest number as the least of the commandments, and that is the fourth commandment, which says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. The seventh day is the Sabbath of the eternal thy God. No carnal mind can see without the special spiritual revelation of God through his word where it makes any difference which day man observes. Where did Sunday originate? Not with the church, but with the pagan religion of the Roman Empire. It is the day on which the ancient pagans assembled at sunrise, faced the east as they do Easter Sunday morning today, and worshiped the rising sun. It was Constantine, emperor of the Roman Empire, not a pope, who made Sunday the official so-called Christian day of rest. But it was enforced. People were caused to accept it universally by the church. And then he goes to the subtitle, Why the Saints Were Martyred. It was for obeying God's fourth commandment, keeping the Sabbath, that millions were put to death. The local council of Laodicea, around AD 363, passed this decree which said, Christians must not Judaize by resting on the Sabbath, but must work on that day, resting rather on Sunday. But if any man be found to be Judaizing, let them be declared anathema from Christ. The church caused them to be killed. That's the false church. When the church branded one anathema, which means a heretic, the state police, here we go, interesting that he mentions that here, the state police of the empire began torturing him. Unless he recanted, he was tortured until he died. Laws became so strict, no man could hold a job or engage in business unless he worked on Saturday and rested on Sunday. And the world will be so geared that it will be almost impossible for one to buy or sell except he receive this mark of the beast. See, the world is geared that way already today. This is the only commandment which was altered by the Roman Empire. In Daniel 7, verse 25, we read the prophecy of this beast and the little horn, which is a political government of the church, rising up, which was to change times and laws. That is, to change God's law in respect to time, the time for the Sabbath. Next subtitle, what is a mark anyway? Now, what is a mark? In Bible usage, it is virtually synonymous with a sign. See, but it's not the same. But he goes into this. In Bible usage, the mark is virtually synonymous with a sign, in one or two places used interchangeably. There is merely this difference. A mark is a brand of identification forced on one. Cattle raisers put by force their mark on their cattle, their brand. A sign is also a badge of identity, but one voluntarily accepted and used. A druggist hangs a sign in front of a store. It may say, Jones and Company Drugs, or it identifies, in other words, it tells what kind of store and who owns it. Now, the beast, in association with the church, used force to brand the Western world with their mark. Those who obeyed God and keep his Sabbath were martyred. They were unable to buy or sell. But God does not force anyone. God lets us make our own decision about obeying him, accepting Christ, and becoming his obedient children. But is the Sabbath God's sign that we are Christians belonging to him? See? Yes, indeed. It was after God had made and ratified the covenant with Israel. That old covenant, of course, was for limited duration and is now replaced with a new covenant. But any covenant made after it had been made and ratified by blood, so it was part of that old covenant. It was 40 days after that ratification that God made a new, separate, different covenant with himself and all who should be his people to last forever. This was no temporary covenant, but for all generations forever. It is found in Exodus chapter 31, verses 12 through 17. I'll just read part of this. It says, And the Eternal spoke to Moses, saying, Verily, my Sabbath you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations. See, God says it is a Sabbath. His Sabbaths are a sign between you and me through your generations. These generations of Israel are still going on. Now, why is it a sign? Does it identify God to us? Does it identify us as his? That you may know that I am the Eternal that does sanctify you? Get the powerful meaning of those words. It is a sign that we may know that the Eternal is the true God. See, the true God. It identifies who God is. How? Notice verse 17. It is a sign, for in 6 days the Eternal made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. It is a memorial of God's rest from creation. Always, in all parts of the Bible, God identifies himself as Creator. How can we distinguish who is the true God from all the false gods? The true God created everything that is, including everything from which people have made false gods. Some worship the sun, but the Eternal, the true God, created the sun and rules it. Some worship idols carved out of stone or wood or marble, but the true God created that from which they were made and even the human beings who made them. The Sabbath is God's Sabbath, not the Jewish Sabbath. Never does the Bible call it the Jewish Sabbath. It identifies God as the Creator. The Sabbath was made for man, so Jesus, that's in Mark 2, verse 27, so said Jesus. It was made when man was made, that's in Genesis 2, verses 1 and 3, through 3. It was made, and it was Christ, the Yahweh, or the Eternal, who made it. Therefore, he is Lord of the Sabbath. It was made to keep man in the true knowledge of the identity of the true God, to keep him from idolatry, and history proves that every nation that did not keep God's Sabbath worshiped false gods, and it did not know who the true God was. When Israel quit keeping God's Sabbath, they went into idolatry. That's in Ezekiel 20. It was for Sabbath breaking that God sent both Israel and Judah into slavery. Think about that. This is going to happen again. See, this end time captivity. It's going to be for not keeping a specific commandment of God. In other words, that taking the mark of the beast or rejecting the mark of the beast to become a martyr. So it has to do with God's sign again. Continue reading, but back to Exodus 31, verse 17 and 18. It also is a sign by which we are identified as belonging to God. Think about that, how important it is. It is the sign by which we are identified as belonging to God. We belong to whom we obey. So we read in Romans 6, verse 16, it is the sign by which we know he is the Eternal that does sanctify you. To sanctify is to set apart for spiritual use. The Sabbath sets one apart from the world, and always did, as obeying and belonging to God. Can you think of any reason why anyone would ever keep the Sabbath except to obey God? Would any man defy human custom and invite persecution and be set apart as different through human reason? Could any atheist be a Sabbath keeper? The Sabbath identifies God's people. See, the Sabbath identifies God's people. God's people, we have seen above, are identified as they who keep the commandments. The world acknowledges all the other 9 commandments. The only one the world rejects is the 4th. The only one that sets one apart from the world, that identifies one as belonging to God, day is a sign of God is the Sabbath. Notice in verse 16, it is a perpetual covenant. It is a covenant. This is no part of the old covenant, no part of the law of Moses. It was made with Israel after all of these and is a separate and perpetual covenant. That means it doesn't end. Verse 17, it says, it is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. There it is. It is a covenant. It is forever. When given to physical, flesh-born Israel, this covenant punished by death any breaking of the sign. Today, since the administration of the death penalty by the Levites and judges is not being done, that's in 2 Corinthians 3, verses 7 and 8, and since all believers in all nations, whether Israelite or Gentile, are grafted into spiritual Israel, that's in Romans 11, verse 24, the willful refusal to keep this sign is punishable by death. In other words, this time it's the second death. He that despises Moses' law, this is, he's quoting from Hebrews chapter 10, verse 28 and 29, he that despised Moses' law died without mercy under two or three witnesses. But how much sorer punishment, suppose you, shall be thought worthy who has trodden underfoot the Son of God. Okay, let me see how much I've just about done here. I know this is a lot of reading, but it's very important that we understand this, because we're going into a time that we need to have this understanding and history behind us, and make sure you're locked onto the foundation. Continue reading. On right hand and forehead, God says the penalty for sin is death. Sin is the transgression of the law. If we break only this one commandment, we are guilty. The penalty is death. The Roman Church caused people to receive the mark of pagan Rome, the Sunday observed by the pagan Roman Empire, and the penalty for disobedience was death. 50 million or more were put to death, so says history. The Sabbath commandment is the only commandment the world will not accept in its mind, in other words, the forehead, and obey, that means by work or rest, that's with the hand. It is the only commandment that can distinguish between those who have the mark of the beast or the sign of God. See, the complete opposites. That's the decision we're going to be faced with in the future that Mr. Armstrong talked about in those sound bites. We're going to be faced with either the mark of the beast or the sign of God. That's to put it in the most simple terms, and they're diametric opposites. The mark of the beast or the sign of God. That's the choice that we're going to be forced with in the future. And then I know we've already made that choice, but we're going to be, as Mr. Armstrong said, we're going to be tested. We're going to be tested on that. Now, the book of Revelation is written mostly in symbols. The right hand symbolizes work or labor, the forehead, the intellect or mind. It has to do with what we believe in the mind and whether we obey with the hand. How about God's sign? It also was received in the forehead and in the right hand, or in the hand. Regarding one of God's annual Sabbaths, we read, this is in Exodus 13, verse 9, it shall be for a sign unto you upon thine hand, and for a memorial between your eyes, see, the forehead, and the eternal's law may be in thy mouth. That's, again, Exodus 13, verse 9. So he's showing there that God's sign is similar to that mark of the beast, that it has to do with the forehead or the mind or your hand, which represents work. Deuteronomy 6, verse 1. In verses 6 through 8, it says, now these are the commandments, and these words which I command thee this day shall be in your heart, and you shall bind them for a sign upon your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. And similarly, you'll see in Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 18, it says, therefore shall you lay up these my words in your heart and in your soul, bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes. You can also see it in, notice in Proverbs 7, verses 2 and 3, in Revelation chapter 7, verse 3 and 4, in Revelation chapter 14, verse 1. Mr. Armstrong goes on to say, this is absolute proof. Yes, the truth is very plain. The Sabbath is God's sign, standing more than any commandment for obedience. It was symbolically in the hand and in the forehead, just as the mark of the beast, pagan Sunday, was in the right hand and in the forehead. Sunday observance, Christmas, New Year's, Easter, etc., this is the mark of the beast. The church did cause, this is the false church, did cause all under the Holy Roman Empire to receive this mark during the Middle Ages. Not only were active church members caused to observe Sunday instead of the Sabbath, but it became universal custom to so that all Western world, regardless of religious connection or belief, accepted Sunday instead of Saturday as the weekly day of rest. It has become universal in the Western world, except for Judaism, Islam, and a few sects in Christianity, and the comparative few whom God has called out of this world and into His true church. Has she stopped? Just at present, she has not the power to enforce this mark on everyone, but there will be a United States of Europe, a union of 10 nations. It will be a union of church and state. The church once again will sit astride the beast. Notice in Daniel chapter 7, it says, I beheld in the same horn, that's the papacy, made war with the saints, and prevailed against them until the Ancient of Days came, that's the second coming of Christ, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High. Yes, the mark of the beast once again will be enforced. No one will be able to hold a job or to engage in business without it. Those refusing will once again be tortured and martyred, probably by the secret police of the political state, but at the behest of the church. Today, all nations are deceived by this paganism masquerading under the name of Christianity. Today, America, Canada, Britain, Israelitish nations, descended from the ancient so-called lost 10 tribes of Israel, are actually in the ways of this Babylon. See, we are in the ways. God's last warning is this: come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, that you receive not of her plagues. That's Revelation chapter 18, verse 4. If you are branded by this mark, rejecting the sign of God in your forehead and hand, you shall be tortured by God's plagues without mercy. Yes, you. But if you obey God, if you are watching, praying without ceasing, you shall be accounted worthy to escape and come under God's protection. Luke 21, verse 36. That's the end of reading and the end of this booklet. And I know there's a lot of reading, but I wanted to put emphasis on certain parts of that. And again, you can find this in the second half of Who or What is the Prophetic Beast. I would advise going back and reading the whole thing, because the first part shows specifically who it is. There's a lot of historical proof there and the prophecies relating to this coming European beast power. But what I would like to do now is play another soundbite that Mr. Armstrong had in this 1983 sermon, and we'll just take a listen to that.
From now on, brethren, until the kingdom of God is not going to be all peaches and cream. If you think it's going to be just all beautiful and everything is hopsy-topsy and dandy, forget it. We're in for nothing but trouble, and the whole world is. But we are on God's side, and that means He's on our side, doesn't it? And we need to get a little better on His side. And we're going to have to do some fasting and praying, and I'm going to set aside a time for fasting and prayer in the next few Sabbaths. So that's it for now, brethren. But whatever you do, keep close to God from now on, because I want to tell you that times are different, and the devil knows he has but a short time. Now, maybe we don't know it. We better wake up to the fact that He does only have a short time, and that means we only have a short time to be ready.
Okay. Some good advice in there. Get close to God. Good time for fasting and prayer. We have a lot of troubled times ahead, and it's going to be fearful if we're not staying close to God and stay close to each other in fellowship as much as we can, but mainly stay on our knees close to God and stay close to this trunk of the tree, this knowledge that God gave us, this understanding, so as we see these things develop in front of us, we won't be fearful. And you know, as these things, as society does begin to unravel around us, we'll have to experience a certain amount of it before God removes us from it. So, but at the same time, we're going to be entering a time of miracles. God is going to be performing more and more miracles. And so we really should be ready for that, be preparing for that, because if you don't believe that we have a miracle-working God, then we're going to lose faith. And so finally, I want to conclude, and just by way of this message, has just been to show what's kind of going on behind the scenes and how this is all leading up to the eventual enforcement of the mark of the beast. But hopefully you should be able to see, and I'll be bringing it out in the weeks and months ahead, bits and pieces of what's going on with our government and how it's being manipulated by the European Union, and just to show how we are already coming under the sway of that European Union. And so you should be able to see that we're being set up by our own policies and our own governmental policies. We're being set up to be taken over by the European Union. And that's going to lead to a captivity that's going to catch the vast majority of Americans by surprise. And so, but we should also at the same time have faith in God's Word and faith in Jesus Christ and His truth, because He is going to deliver His people. And so in that context, we should expect mighty miracles to take place, because He is going to lead us out into a final place of training. He'll be leading us into His kingdom if we humble ourselves under His mighty hand and follow Him. So I just want to sign off here by saying I hope this has been helpful and encouraging, and I don't intend to cause fear or panic, but this is the simple, plain truth of where we are at now in prophecy. Things are beginning to accelerate. So I'll sign off here by saying I love you all and talk to you next time. But as I do sign off, I'll conclude by playing one more soundbite from Mr. Armstrong, and that'll be the conclusion of this sermon.
But this church, well, you're either going to risk death or you're going to take the mark of the beast, one or the other, unless we are taken to a place of protection and safety. And there are two places in the book of Revelation that certainly indicate we shall be. But it's going to take a miracle. Now, it took a miracle from God to get the Israelites out of Egypt way back there in the days of Moses. He had to strike a rock and water came out of it, and He may have to perform just as great miracles again this time. You better begin to believe in miracles, because your very existence may depend on it.